Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Thursday. Word on the street is that it is the 3rd of September. Don't always remember. Yes, I will. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Kelly.
Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello.
So glad you're here. Now, Charlotte, I'd like to start with you and a press release that came across the wire this morning that talks a little bit, and you've covered this, obviously, at MacObserver.com, about Apple and some new power initiatives in Europe.
So, yeah, Apple has set a target that it will be carbon neutral by 2030. Mm-hmm. And so there's all different factors in that, and it's basically trying to also influence, part of that is trying to influence its supply chain as well to be only use renewable energy, to be carbon neutral. Obviously, when you're a $2 trillion company, you have quite a lot of sway to do things like that. So today they announced a couple of different things. It's investing in the company's investing in the construction of two of the world's largest onshore wind turbines. They're going to be about 200 meters tall each, and they're expected to produce 62 gigawatt hours of energy per year.
Wow.
It's really big.
It's really, really enormous big. Yes. It's definitely bigly. There's also a new data center which has gone online today in another part of Denmark called Viborg. It's a 45,000 square meter facility that's used for things like the App Store, Apple Music, iMessage and Siri in Europe. Mm-hmm. Again, run on renewable energy. And as I mentioned, Apple's also trying to get its supply chain to be carbon neutral, to use renewable energy. One supplier, Varta, which is, I believe, a German company, is now running its Apple production process with 100% renewable power. And there's a variety of other companies in different European countries that are also moving in that direction as well. So it's kind of put its foot down, and it turns out when Apple says to suppliers jump, often they say how high. And I think probably in this case, that is a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Agreed. That's interesting. And I can't really get over a 200 meter tall.
I
can't either.
Yeah. It's very big. It's a lot. This is serious stuff.
Yeah.
There's puppy time happening behind me, by the way. I apologize for the noise.
The puppy is forgiven. Energy too.
The puppy's super excited to hear about renewable energy and carbon neutral Apple.
Yeah, so, 200 meters. You know. He notes is tall.
Yes. He is entirely correct in that assessment. So that's cool. Like I said, we saw a press release about it this morning, and it's nice to see that Apple is making progress and sort of holding themselves accountable, I guess, in that particular way. And I'm glad to see it. It's a little bit more transparency. I think part of the reason I personally am excited about all of this is because we get very little transparency from Apple, and this is a place where they've been very open. So it's a nice change of pace.
There might be a reason for that, but yeah.
Tim hasn't made this joke for a while, but he has joked repeatedly that this is an area where he wishes all this competition would copy Apple.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not entirely certain he's joking. I would very much like to see what kind of progress other companies are making. I think it would be great. Anyway.
To be fair, I think Microsoft, if you looked at Microsoft, they've got a similar, if not more, they might even argue more ambitious pledge on this.
They do. They are working toward it, and they do have a report. But there's none of that from a lot of other companies. So I'm excited about everyone who does. So there you are. Charlotte,
talking of Microsoft.
Speaking of Microsoft, as a matter of fact,
it's almost like we planned this show.
You'd think that it's like we had an entire conversation ahead of time about what we were going to discuss. We have some information about a new thing that Microsoft is doing for deep fake detection.
Yeah. So tiny bit of self-promotion before we get to the story. I'm obviously interested in this subject because I wrote a book on fake news. Interestingly, this issue of deep fakes was only when I started writing and researching the book, which is about a year old now, just over. The thing about deep fakes was like a thing that the people I interviewed warned me about. It wasn't necessarily a thing that was really prevalent. But it has increased, and it's things that are basically a video that makes it look like someone is saying or doing something they're not. It can be a still photograph, and use audio as well. That kind of thing. It's data media that's often manipulated to make it look like someone is saying or doing something that they are not.
Yeah, and this is very different from like when you watch a movie on television that has a swear in it and they obviously dub in with a totally different voice saying something totally different that doesn't match the lip reading at all. Like, these look reasonably legitimate, like that person actually said that thing.
Oh, they look they can look totally legitimate. They can look often it can be either very simple,
yeah, completely unrelated to an over it's not related at all to an overdub.
No, but I'm talking about when you watch one, like it is very easy to watch one of these and think that's what that person actually said. And not very obviously, like, you know, somebody's dubbed in Charlotte saying something different when I'm talking or something.
This type of thing can often be you can have something that's a very, very, very good cut and paste job. More at the moment is using artificial intelligence to bind the video and the audio and those kind of things. It's becoming a real issue. Because if you can't believe obviously it's an issue if you can't believe what you're seeing and hearing with your own ears and eyes. So Microsoft, for obvious reasons, is interested in this topic and is trying to release a whole bunch of tools to try and counter deepfakes. The one it announced I linked to earlier in the week was called the Microsoft Video and Thought Authenticator. Easy for you to say. The idea is it can analyze a still photo or video and it provides a percentage chance, or, you know, like a confidence score, that it's real, that it's been artificially manipulated. In fact, in terms of video, it can actually do a percentage in real time on each frame as the video is playing, which is pretty incredible, really. It says it starts by detecting the blending boundary of the deep fake or subtle fading and grayscale, you know, things that the human eye might not be able to detect. So it's pretty advanced work. It's the kind of work a company with the capacity of Microsoft can and should do. Mm-hmm. It's a really interesting thing that they're taking this seriously. They say in the kind of original announcement, they say no organization is going to be able to have a meaningful impact on combating it themselves, but they, you know, they'll do what they can do to help. So they're working with a variety of different AI organizations and actually some journalism projects. So all sorts of things that they're trying to do as part of tackling this issue.
This sounds really interesting to me.
It's huge interesting.
Yeah. Aside from the sort of knee jerk, like, this is Microsoft doing this, the fact that somebody's doing it, and also sort of by being a great big company like Microsoft, making this part of a larger, more general conversation, I am very much for. So,
this is the type I think Microsoft should be doing, because it has the capabilities and the reach to do it.
I think that other companies should also probably be trying.
Yeah, and that is the point Microsoft make as well. But they are the type of company that, you know, has, as I say, the AI capability, the server capability, the technical capability to be one of the leading players in this. But yeah, you're totally right, Brian.
So here's the interesting aspect of this. As with all things, this will become a cat and mouse game. Like, so far, totally. The goal has simply been to fool our eyes, and there is still work to be done there by people up to no good or interested in profiting on other people up to being up to no good. But from fooling our eyes, it'll be, you know, the new cat and mouse game will be fooling Microsoft's detection software. And if, you know, if anything, by simply providing a tool that can judge and analyze. It gives the folks who are, you know, doing this sort of work a new bar to meet. And even if Microsoft's software is good, it'll only be good for a certain amount of time.
Oh, yeah, constantly. This is a constantly evolving kind of game of whack-a-mole. You're totally right.
Yep. Yep. And it's too bad. I wonder how. I mean, we're already witnessing significant threats to what we have thought of as modern society, mm-hmm. in a number of different ways in a number of different countries. I wonder how modern society can survive easily done deepfakes. There are already so many people who don't believe what their own eyes and what their own ears tell them for a variety of reasons. When this sort of thing becomes so incredibly prevalent, mm-hmm. what is anyone to believe? And then where does that take us? Where does that take us as you know, people trying to live in this world? And it's kind of a scary thought to me.
Yeah, same. No, I mean, when I was writing the book on this, and this is before the kind of AI powered deepfake stuff became really prevalent, you do start thinking these things. You're like, what can I believe? Whatever anyone says, and like, how cynical do you become? And who? Yeah, it's hugely influential. And you know, there may be cynics that say, well, of course, Microsoft wants to tell you what's true or not.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you're. Assertion, Brian, of it as a kind of game of whack-a-mole, I think is right. But I think, as we said, companies like with the capacity of a Microsoft are as good, you know, well powered to help counter this problem.
Another issue with this particular topic is above and beyond people not knowing what to believe, deepfakes can become a tool for people to choose what to believe. You can just dismiss anything that you don't agree with.
Sure.
Obviously.
It's we're seeing that now. We're seeing that with the way the term fake news is bandied about.
Yep.
Right. Anything you don't agree with is fake news. And you know, even eyewitness videos can just be, you know, written off. That didn't happen. That's just a deep fake. It's scary stuff.
Yeah. It's very, your point, Brian, where you slightly called Kelly up on just kind of comparing it to overdubs. I think that it's sort of a fair point because we have to be very strict with what we define as, you know, misinformation that we see online in terms of, like, for me, again, I say this in the book, it always had to have some level of intent.
Right.
And I think the same is true of deepfakes. It's not about making, just because you want to manipulate something that's funny. That's not a deep fake. If there's a malicious or financial or both kind of intent, that's to me where the border changes. And that's hopefully the type of thing. Like, I don't want this Microsoft tool to be flagging up a funny TikTok that someone's overdubbed, right? I do want it to be flagging up if someone is putting words into the mouth of someone very important in the world.
Right.
That they never said.
Yep. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. Good times. Oh, yes. Light Thursday conversations here.
Well, the sort of disappointment of this is that this does, you know, it's a conversation that we have to have. I do have to give sort of additional points to Microsoft for the fact that when they came out and talked about all of this, they said, you know, like, we shouldn't be the only ones in this particular game. Just so we're clear, like, I was very pleased to see that they said, you know, there should be many, many tools to allow this to be detected and go about it differently.
Should be doing this too.
Yeah. I wonder.
Maybe they are. Maybe they
I'd like to think there's just aren't ready yet. That's my hope. That we will, that theirs will be hot on the heels of this one. So that's, we'll see. When that happens, you will hear about it here at MacObserver.com. And once again, Charlotte, I'm going to come to you, and we're going to talk a little bit about something that we talked about on Tuesday, and that is the Apple-Google contact tracing advancement that came out of iOS 13.7.
Yeah, and actually, it was the three of us, wasn't it, that were discussing this, and the news had just broken about the release of 13.7 and the updated exposure notifications, and we were trying to unpick it kind of live as we were recording the show, but now we've all had a little bit more time to take it in. I just thought I'd go back, and there's a video coming up on the Mac Observer's YouTube channel as well, which will tell you both how to turn it on and therefore off, and explain how it works, but we thought we'd take a couple of minutes on the show to do it as well, because there's a few things. The one thing that we were trying to decipher during the show on Tuesday was whether it still needed an app from a health authority,
and
the answer to that is conclusively no.
Okay,
this is no. I went through the documentation, and it says some public health authorities may build apps and offer them as a way to enable exposure notifications for users, and they'll be available to download from the Apple App Store, Google Play Store. It goes on to say, in some regions, public health authorities may offer exposure notifications without creating an app. If this is available in your region, you may receive a notification when it becomes available, and you can decide whether you want to participate. Again, I show you how to turn that on and off in the video.
Excellent.
In both cases, the user will need to consent to the terms and conditions before exposure notifications become active. So that's important. And the other thing that worried people was about who gets the information,
right,
and that kind of thing. So the documentation again says the public health authority will be able to access a list of beacons, that's Bluetooth beacons, provided by users confirmed as positive for COVID-19 who have consented to sharing them. Mm-hmm. The system was also designed so that Apple and Google do not have access to information related to any identifiable individual. I'm going to repeat that. The system was also designed so that Apple and Google do not have access to information related to any identifiable individual.
Awesome.
That's fantastic. Right. That's exactly what it should be.
Like, they don't want to know. And it goes on to say exposure notification data will be stored and processed on device. Mm-hmm. If the only way a public health authority gets that data is if a user chooses to report a positive diagnosis of COVID-19, and if a user is notified that they have come into contact with an individual who is positive for COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. That's exactly what I would want if I were looking to track this. Is, you know, I don't want my stuff to leave my phone, and it won't. The only way I'm going to find anything out is if I opt in, and I'm here to tell you, I've done some of the health stuff on my watch, like the to walk through setting up the ECG, I think it is. Brian, maybe you remember. When you walk through setting up some of those things, like just so that you can try out the ECG, I thought I got this new watch and I want to see what it's like. There are a whole bunch of notifications that you have to go through that say, like, here's what's going to happen to your information. And they say it in English and it's not 19 screens long. This is what's going to happen. This is what you can expect. And all of it is very clear along the way. So, I would like for this to be something that I could utilize, because I think it would be great if I could utilize some of this. Mostly I'm just sort of, I'm looking forward to being able to turn it on and at least be able to monitor exposure. That's really the thing that I'm looking for with that. And I think it would be nice, especially for people who are still going into work. If you are someone who still reports to work every day in a different location than where you live, or if you have to go to the store and things, it would really be nice to be able to just sort of track in case there is exposure, and then to be able to take measures accordingly.
Sure.
I feel like for a minute, Brian, you were going to say something. No. All right.
I'm on board.
I think it's great. I think we may have met. Well, we talked earlier about health departments. I have made a few calls to the health department here in Oregon in order to find out where things were with that. I ended up getting to leave a bunch of voicemail. That's always a good time. And so I haven't heard anything on that. So if anyone else has, or if you know someone who can tell us what the deal is in your state as far as being able to use this, we definitely want to hear it. And we want to be able to publicize it for other people as well. So you can get us at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by comments in the show notes.
Yeah, there's the states that have signed up to the program initially is what we discussed on Tuesday. It's Maryland, Nevada, Virginia, and Washington District of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
I know it's not a state. Don't send me emails. I know it should be. Don't send me emails.
It's okay.
It's on the list of places.
It's D.C. Yeah. In this case, six places, you know, like five states in D.C. We'll call it that. That's fine.
The important thing to notice is that this updated framework that came with 13.7 allows for interoperability between states as well.
Right. And Maryland and Virginia, I think, were the example we had on Tuesday of like two places that it would be really good to have that. So, yeah, I would like that here as well. So anyway, small housekeeping note before we wrap it up. There will be no show on Monday. It is Labor Day. So go outside in your own backyard, I guess. And try and have a barbecue and enjoy yourself. I don't know what else we can really do on Monday in 2020. So, but we will not be around on Monday. So you'll have to muddle through without us. Just like you'll have to muddle through the rest of today without us, because we're done right now. So Brian, as always, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having us, Kelly.
And Charlotte, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me. Happy Labor Day.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.